You're listening to a Mint podcast brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi, I'm Shovik Das. I'm Leslie DeMonte.
And I'm Deepti Ahuja. You're listening to Mint Etc.,
a podcast where we will talk about important developments in technology
and how they will transform our lives, work, and play as we know it.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Mint Etc. podcast. Last week, if you would have joined us, or last to last week, if you would have joined us, we did take a little bit of a break in the middle. We were speaking about the Consumer Electronics Show. Now, of course, CES is always a lot of fun. It's always a lot of interesting new technologies. And one thing, of course, that defined CES this year was artificial intelligence. And one thing that Leslie, of course, also agreed upon is that CES seems to have joined the AI party a little late. But nevertheless, it has sparked up a few very interesting conversations. We are going to delve a little deeper into it. One device which caught everyone's attention, Leslie, Deepti, I'm sure you guys also would have observed, was this Rabbit R1 assistant.
Yes.
It's a tiny little orange, small phone-like thing which claims to...
In fact, actually, Deepti was saying that she's going to take us down the rabbit hole. So I thought she was referring to the device.
No, I mean, I was just reminded of that song, White Rabbit. Right, one pill makes you larger, one pill makes you small. But I'm telling you, I'm going to buy this device. It is so cool. I love it. And it is so divergent, like, you know, neurodivergent friendly. That's crazy how neurodivergent friendly this device is. I mean, I can't wait to get it into my hands.
You're going to spend $200 to buy that?
I will.
Okay.
I will.
US dollars, it's not Australian or Singapore.
I know. But see, this is how much... I mean, I'm generally one of those people who will say no first to everything. But this is that one device that is so neurodivergent friendly that I want it. But Shovik, you want to say something?
But it's interesting because there are thousands of people literally going mad on LinkedIn, going mad on Twitter... or X, which Twitter is called nowadays, and they're all speaking about how this device is really cool, and it's probably, some people have even gone as far as saying that it's the right prototype for the kind of device that is going to become mainstream going forward. And right on cue, Samsung has gone ahead and launched what they've claimed are the world's first AI phones, and they've claimed so because they...
But before that, Shovik, I think sticking to the rabbit part, I think a couple of things, you know. One, I think we need to speak a little about, you know, the technology behind it, because I found that very fascinating.
Yeah.
And also talking about the fact that, you know, a lot of people have been raving about it. I was like, not surprised, but, you know, I was pretty, you know, I like the idea that even Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella, he said that he looks smitten with the idea of Rabbit R1. And in fact, actually, Nadella was so impressed with the device that he compared the AI assistant's launch presentation to Steve Jobs' highly acclaimed presentation of the iPhone in 2007. So, you know, to make those kind of comparisons indicates how... this device has captured the imagination of so people. Like just in 30th November 2022, ChatGPT. That was the way, you know, it became the face of AI. Now, this is the next one that I'm seeing after a long time. So after 1 year gap, Rabbit has, you know, sort of caught our attention. So all this while we were speaking about large language models, Rabbit talks about large action models. So that is also another interesting. So I was just thinking, you know, when I was talking about it, in fact, my niece asked me about it. I mean, she was more like testing my knowledge about the rabbit rather than that, because I could see that, you know, that smoke on her face kind of stuff. But then I told her, she said, can you explain like how you explain to a five-year-old kid? I said, well, you're not a five-year-old kid because she's 12 years old. So I said, you should be knowing what you're talking about. But having said that, I said, see, my sense, the way I look at it is, you know, from typing, remember on those old devices, old phones, feature phones, we used to type. Okay, right. And then we moved to touch and we were like excited about everything. And now we will move to voice and speaking in your own natural language. And here we are talking about voice to action.
Right.
So LLM to an LAM. Now, yeah. If you look at his definition of the LAM also, that is also pretty interesting because that is kind of the cornerstone of the Rabbit operating system. Right. Now, how it understands human intentions on computers, you know, how it understands and, you know, what you say and how it gets it done. So these are interesting parts about Rabbit that I was, you know, sort of excited about.
Right. Do you feel at some point I felt that, you know, it kind of claims to be a device which would replace the need for multiple logins, multiple, you know, sort of fragmented
apps essentially, but I don't think it's a handset replacement as of now. It may at some point in time provide, because as of now, I think you may have to have two devices with you.
I was in fact just going to kind of come to that, where maybe both you and Deepthi can speak about that. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, do we look at technology as something that would solve, you know, make our life better or easier, more seamless? On that note, what is really the sort of value that the R1 brings when you consider it to be a separate device which you use alongside your smartphone, which is another device to kind of charge every day and, you know, take care of and all of that? So how do you see it as something that can like sort of really make a difference, or is it just like the cool value for now?
No, I think Rabbit is extremely intuitive. And the way I would want, to look at my searches and search histories, and the way I would want it to learn from me and my way of doing things, all of that is possible in Rabbit, right? And I think they have an education sort of mode also, that you can train your phone to actually do certain tasks a certain way without actually making the kind of effort that you would in a regular phone. And that also isn't, it won't give you a guarantee that that will happen. I think that feature is really, really cool. So I think it's very intuitive. It's extremely human-centric and it saves me so much screen time. And it kind of stops, that overwhelm of too many options and too many possibilities. However, that also has a downside, which we can talk about later. But yeah, to begin with, it's not just cool, but it's also something that's very, very effective in my day-to-day life. I think that is something. And I would totally go ahead and I'd love to replace my regular phone with Rabbit. I don't care, because see, I'm already a content creator. I have devices. I have a mic. I have separate mics. I have a separate camera. I have separate equipment for all of these things, right? And otherwise, I'm a private person. So I wouldn't want to like capture every single moment of my waking, like every single waking moment of my life, right? I wouldn't want to do that. So Rabbit is just very handy.
Yeah, so for instance, if you're making an itinerary for a holiday, I mean, that's any LLM can do that, that's easy. But if you're using the LAM along with the LLM, then, you know, the Rabbit kind of a device can, you know, make your flight booking, your accommodation reservations for you. So that's an extra step that looks like it could make, you know, AI helpful. And then also, you know, I think in the demo also they showed it, because you help workers streamline the processes. For instance, like you could, you know, you have an option of showing it a document, right? You could show it an Excel sheet or any spreadsheet for the matter, ask it to add data, customize it. So I thought those were pretty helpful. And I think we had this conversation last time, whether we want 10 devices, whether we want one device, whether we want 100 features in one device, or we want 10 devices with 10 features. Now, see, at some point in time, all these things will come together and become a whole, but you require these kind of devices to make the, one is to make the user interface simpler, make it more productive. I think it is needed. It is needed.
Yeah. Right. And on that note, as we were just about to speak a little while earlier, Samsung has also come in with its AI phones, and of course, the premise being that, you know, you already have a phone, and then you have partnerships with Google, who are already doing a lot of things. So why don't you just add AI to the phone? You know, you capture a photo and you have somebody annoying behind you. You know, Deepthi might want to erase certain people. And Samsung's phone says, well, our phone can do it by default. And Samsung's not really the first one, because Google's Pixel 8, which was launched in September last year, that already does that. It has those magic eraser features, magic video editors. In fact, Google's phone, when it launched, I remember I had written an article which went on Mint, where we had specified that this seems to be the beginning of a trend where AI will be the feature in phones. So Leslie, have you seen the new Samsung phones? Have you had a chance to kind of go through what they offer? And doesn't it seem to be pretty much like the obvious next step for us watching the industry? This was supposed to happen, right?
You're talking about the S24, right? The Galaxy S24. Typically, I mean, if you're looking at the numbers, I was looking at Canalys' numbers because I happened to write a piece on how generative AI smartphones will capture the imagination of the market. Now, right. You are just talking about AI enabled. I had already, you know, I was talking about generative AI because I was looking at some of the numbers by Canalys. Now, AI-capable smartphones will likely comprise 45% of the total smartphone market with 635 million units in 2027. Now, 2027 is not far off. It's just 4 years from here. Right. And if you look at generative AI, what does it do? It can create new content with the help of prompts, whether it is in English, Hindi, Bengali, French, or whatever. So now if you look at S24, it already were expecting, you know, those features like live transcribe, which anyway, most AI features have it. But if you look at counterpoint numbers, they are saying that generative AI smartphones with preliminary data that they have given, they're projecting shipments to reach over 100 million units in just this year. Now, yes, that's not a small number. And within the next 4 years, by the next 4 years, like 2027, Counterpoint expects Gen AI smartphones. I'm not talking of AI enabled only. So they're expecting these Gen AI smartphones to, you know, reach about 522 million units. And that will be a CAGR of almost like 83%. And right. So if you look at, you know, cumulative numbers, effectively you're talking about more than 1 billion Gen AI smartphones to be shipped between, calendar year 2024 and 2027, just 4 years. Now, this is right. Not a small number. But I think the catch here, if we are talking about, is, okay, what separates an AI, just an AI-enabled phone from a generative AI smartphone? Right. I mean, that is what we are actually talking about. So here we are talking about, so I'm just giving the definitions of what Canalys is. So Canalys defines a Gen AI smartphone as one that where you're integrating a large language model and other Gen AI model on devices. So right. That will also necessitate, you know, it will necessitate a different type of computing platform and, you know, also the software, allied software capabilities. So right. Now, for instance, an AI-capable smartphone would have a system-on-chip, the SoC, which should include a kind of a dedicated unit like MediaTek's APU or the, you know, AI processing unit. That's exactly the that's why it's called an APU. Now, if you look at the S24, for instance, the Samsung S24, that has a MediaTek processor. So exactly, right. You're moving in that direction. Or you could also have a Google TPU. TPUs are basically the tensor processing units. Now, TPUs, then the neural processing units, then the AI accelerators, then the GPUs, which are the graphics processing units, are always, you know, for used as for the benefit of our listeners. These are always, as they know, are used for. They were earlier used in gaming, like GPUs. Now they're used for AI processing. Right. But now. Along with that, you also have the APUs, the TPUs, the NPUs, etc. So the smartphone, basically a Gen AI smartphone, should be able to run LLMs and other generative AI models on device. That is the basic definition. Now, how they pick up, what are the benefits that you see? I already have the ChatGPT, the app on my phone. It runs pretty well, actually, for that matter. Right. Now, so the processors are getting more powerful. You'll have more capabilities. So if you connect what we spoke about the rabbit and what we're speaking about the Gen AI smartphones, we're definitely heading there. Can they be integrated into one specific unit with capabilities of a large action model as Rabbit has it? Can that be, you know, sort of integrated with a smartphone that we already have, where a smartphone will be running both the LLM and the LAM on that?
Right.
That, I think, is just an engineering problem.
Right. Absolutely. Deepthi, would an AI phone make your life easier? I'm pretty sure it would.
Well, to be honest, as a consumer, even before, I mean, you know, TechCetera happened to me, there was a lot that, you know, the way we used to research phones to buy the best kind of phones as consumers, we just look at the features, we just look at whether it fits our budget, whether, you know, all of these, can we do away with some of these features, and we'd make the comparisons. It never mattered to us what technology was on the phone, why was it there, what was the engineering behind it, and how is it going to impact the industry. These questions were never things that we would think about. Now that AI phones are out there, I mean, you know, again, the question is, how much of these AI chips are going to be supported on the device, and how much of it are going to be dependent upon the cloud, you know, dependent upon the internet access. All of these things are there, right? Having said that, at the end of the day, even if you look at Google Pixel, they just highlighted what the AI could do for their photographs, for the translations, for different kinds of things that they wanted on their phones, and that's about it. So at the end of the day,
just one clarification out here, because I see it's very important to understand the distinction between these two. We talk about cloud only when we're talking about the other kind of devices, because here the whole idea is to have what is known as edge computing, where the processing itself is done on the device.
Correct.
Because the processors are so powerful, but that's why if you recollect that I spoke about APUs, NPUs, CPUs, etc. That's why, because the processors are so powerful that all your processing can be done on the device itself.
Yeah.
You don't have to resort to the cloud, and that's why it's faster. So that, which is why they're talking about running an LLM basically on your device. So that, I think we have to be mindful about that.
Absolutely.
Like, look at your Google, right? It has this Magic Compose, so the new messages by Google feature. They are powered by generative AI. You can offer, you know, sort of suggested responses based on the context of the messages. You could rewrite it in different styles. The Magic Editor and Google Photos, both, I think, Pixel 8 and Pixel Pro, 8 Pro, I think both have that Magic Editor. So that's also, you know, an experimental editing machine. So I think we have a lot of these.
Correct. But what I'm trying to say is, from a regular consumer's point of view, these questions, the depth of these questions, probably the answers don't matter as much as what kind of value are they offering the consumer. Since Shovik asked me, would I want an AI phone, right? So in that...
This question is because there's a very, very small fine print in the entire Samsung presentation of the S24 phones, is that they seem to have mentioned that at least until 2025, they will not be charging any kind of fee to any of the users for their AI features.
Hmm.
However, they don't offer any clarification on what happens after 2025. So some of the reporters who were present at Samsung's event did go up to Samsung and ask this question, the answer was to the tune of that we are committed to keeping AI access free for all and let as many people access the feature until 2025. Until then, our pricing plans will not change. However, after that, that's the question, right? I mean, because in the next year and a half, 2 years, you know, more and more people, and as we've seen, you know, technology is something comes to the absolutely top tier first because it's the most expensive. And AI, of course, a lot of people have said that it is expensive to run all these AI models and train them and everything. And what Samsung seems to be saying is that at a certain point, there would be some sort of a charge associated with using, you know, all the features on your phone. And the features, the real features on your phone that are going to kind of define the devices going forward would be you know, the AI features. It's going to help write your email. It's going to live transcribe your phone calls.
Sure. I'd like to interrupt over here for the simple reason that, okay, fine. This is, you know, kind of representation of what the company is saying. You know, frankly, as a user, I would also ask the question, I would turn around and ask the question that, hello, you're training it on my data. Why shouldn't you keep my features free? I mean, you aren't, you know, Samsung or any phone maker for that matter of fact is not doing me a favor. It is crowdsourcing its training on Dipti's data, on your data, on my data.
Correct.
I mean, how dare, can they even, you know, suggest that they want to charge me for this? So I think that they are keeping the feature free, which is why most people are using it. Now, at some point in time, you're going to tell me that, okay, now you're going to turn around and say, okay, aapka kaam ho gaya. So I will not, you know, now you have to start paying me for that. Hello, you have been using my data and paying it. So you should be paying me a royalty. This is my comment.
No, absolutely. I think that's interesting that you mentioned this, Leslie, because I think this is going to be another of those big tech moments in the next 2 to 5 years, probably, where, you know, all the regulators come together and question these companies on whether it's ethical for them to kind of take users' data and charge the users themselves for AI features. And the companies would speak about whatever they've spoken about so far in lawsuits and, you know, protecting users. But privacy, of course, since we are speaking about this, is another big factor that, you know, what happens to the user privacy? Do you trust a Samsung? Do you trust a Google? Do you trust a, you know, anybody else, Qualcomm, Apple, for that matter, with...
Shavik, why are you just singling out the Googles and the thing? Because the point is, every app maker is stealing so much data from you.
Actually, no, but I have a different concern.
No, one second. I'm saying we have the hundreds of apps over there that are always listening to your conversation. Correct. Look at the permissions that you yourself have given the moment you download some of... See, those are so-called system apps are there and the other apps are there. Now, every app has, you know, in... access to any amount of information that you have. So really speaking, look at the, just take any app at random and check the permissions you have given it and look at the data that it is giving. So we don't even know where that who's using the data and how they're using the data. So I'm saying that it's not only the big tech companies, even the small app makers.
Yeah. But I think the question is that would you be okay going forward in an AI-first smartphone world, which is what it probably seems to be?
Shavik, I'm not okay. I don't think anybody's okay, but you tell me what is the option. So they would cut access. So now this is exactly the point that a company like, if you remember, we had done a story on BharOS.
Right, absolutely.
Now BharOS, the point exactly was, so during the India Science Fest, I met Karthik once again. And of course, I am yet to write about it. But I did have a chat with Karthik about what are the next steps for BharOS. But if you remember, you know, that you'll have to wait for the article when I write it. But if you remember what we said about BharOS even last time, that he wanted to have only minimal apps. Right. So you only put those amount of apps that you require. Mm-hmm. And at some point in time, yes, he would talk about creating a whole app ecosystem where you can select the apps you want. And that was to tackle the same privacy issue. Because honestly speaking, how many apps do we actually require? Now, you may require what? Like, for instance, he himself just uses about a maximum, I think, about 6 apps or so. Rest of the entire phone is free of every other clutter. So, because that is the reason, because your operating system has been designed such that you don't require so many apps. Here, these guys have created that bloatware where they make you feel that, okay, you require an app for your health, an app for this, an app for that. Again, if you look at the Rabbit stuff, they're doing away with the APIs, the apps. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I like the models that are coming up where it can protect your privacy. So you may want to think about these issues also.
Right. Deepthi, what about you? Do you use more than 6 apps?
I use hundreds of apps. No, but I have these concerns and I don't feel okay with it. I agree.
You may be a super user because on average, studies have been done across. I think, Shavik, you may remember some of the studies that have been done. I don't think people use on average more than 10 apps. You must be some kind of crazy.
Nahi, I'm just exaggerating. But
chhoot bol rahe ho.
But, okay, I do use a couple of apps. I definitely use more than six, for sure. As far as privacy concerns are there, I'm always concerned. Every time I download an app or someone asks me to download an app to do a certain something because they are active on that app and they want to communicate through that, I'm like, I don't want it, but I still have to agree to it. Because that's the way people are communicating with each other, right? Everyone has their own personal preferences. And I communicate with a lot of people. I mean, just podcasters, if I just take them. I have 30 to 40 podcasts active every month. So different people have different channels and ways of communication. They have different ways to research their content. And then they have different apps to research their content, right? So they like to share it on the same app. So I do have to download those apps, and I hate having to and that cookie preference that comes in the beginning, which obviously, I mean, now there is this whole thing with Google and marketers and the whole cookie thing that's happening that they are not going to allow. I think that is one of the news pieces out there that they're not going to allow cookies to happen anymore, right? So all of those things, it just seems like a sham to me. As a regular user, it just seems like a sham. Even if I choose, it's still a sham. But that's not that much of a concern to me anymore because, yes, there is this problem and there is no solution per se at this point of time. And it's definitely not a solution that an individual can ideally come up with. It's a solution that the system should come up with, right, to protect the citizens, to make it more human-centric, everything like technology more human-centric. My concern was about the bubbles that will get created, because if these chips, these AI chips, are going to be more intuitive to our preferences, right, then they're just going to keep suggesting things that we like, and yeah,
Dipti, let me turn the question and then let me ask you. When you go shopping, do you like recommendations or do you not like recommendations?
I actually don't. No, I like
so then,
to be...
Then it's all. Then why do you like it on your smartphone? Then dispense with the apps. No? So, you know...
I mean, but with the AI phones, if they are going to be intuitive in that sense...
You have control on that. You can always control the apps. See, that is the point. Okay. The whole idea is to delete those apps that you don't need. Na? Like you want a health app, you want this app, you want somebody to check your blood pressure, then afterwards, you know, start complaining about whether somebody is taking your data and using it for some other purposes. My point is, honestly, there
are
other
gadgets. But you've already given the permission now.
No, but my point is like, see, for the blood pressure, we used to first go to a doctor and get the blood pressure. Now we want to get it on our smartwatches, right?
Correct.
We want to get everything. So, you look at convenience and look at the trade-off. Yes. And you ask yourself whether it is worth the trade-off. I mean, this is my simple way of looking at it. I don't know if Shaubhik has some other point of view. But for me, this is always a trade-off. And you may want to, also explore how far do we want to go with technology? How much, leeway do you want to give the technology? All these kind of things. It's a philosophical question also. And also perspective of life, a way of life.
Absolutely. In fact, one of the things which happened to me recently is this pretty popular medicine delivery service. It's a startup. I was using it pretty regularly. In fact, their service was so consistent to a point that I even subscribed to their sort of delivery feature, and they would kind of give certain discounts, and it made sense. And I was looking to get like a test for the heart or the liver, and I had added the test to the cart, and I it's not like I was going through with it, I just wanted to see what all it had, and it wasn't letting me check the full list of the all the tests that were there in the package until I added it. And I just did that and I just let it be. 15 minutes later, I start getting calls from this service where they were random customer service agents who knew my name, who knew where I stayed, who knew my phone number, who knew my blood group, and who started telling me that, you have a heart ailment, so now you should go to this doctor, you should consider buying, like a blood oxygen monitor, and you should buy a, blood pressure device, and I completely lost it. And I remember I spent 3 days outraging on Twitter. And
you'd have called them bloodsuckers.
But you know, and the funny part is, this app had absolutely no permissions enabled, and Apple has that feature which says ask app not to track, that was also enabled and all of it. But of course, they have access to their own product cards, and I was like, you know, you're just calling me, I have disabled every single permission, and you're calling me just based on, you know, this test being in my card. I have
very connected world. I mean, you just do a simple Google search or the Bing search or any search for that matter of fact, which is why people then like to go to DuckDuckGo or use VPNs and stuff. Because otherwise you do a simple search and you know the amount of ads you'll be landing up with. Just a random Correct. Search. Like, say as media people, we may be looking for a story. So somebody is a real estate reporter, for instance. They will get every, you know, listing of every property, because the search engine might think that this reporter is a person who, you know, is going to buy the next house. So, of course, it's pretty stupid, but look at the amount of data that we have already given. So, it is clearly a menace. The only problem with that intrusion and menace is that if it starts, you know, impacting your life, and as you said, if it starts stealing your bank accounts, then it leads to ransomware, then it leads to other kinds of, things where it is, like say for instance, your data, like now what you said about the disease part of it, if that is out in the open market, somebody, you know, some insurance agent could increase theoretically the premium of your thing, because they have access to the data. And that is something that we all have argued against, you know, saying that how can they have access to this kind of data? It's a trade-off. Recommendations help, but at the same time, sure, at some point in time, I want to know when I'm looking out for the particular book, whether there are any books related to it. But sometimes I just don't want to know because I know what I'm looking out for.
Absolutely. And on that bombshell, it's time to end the second episode, because that leaves us with a lot of things to ponder upon on whether you would trade off your personal privacy for convenience, whether that's even a trade-off to be spoken about, whether you'd pay for AI services, whether you'd even have the option to not pay for an AI service in the next 2 to 5 years or not. Always feel free to write to us if you think we've not made sense about a topic that you're very touchy about, or if you think we've made sense about a topic that you're not really concerned about and that got you interested. Do write to us about that as well. And with that, as always, every week, thank you, Leslie. Thank you, Deepthi. It's time to sign off.
Bye.
Bye.
So, folks, that's it for this episode. You are listening to Mint TechCetera.
You can reach out to us on LinkedIn if you have any questions. Our handles are in the description.
This episode was produced by me, Deepthi Ahuja. It was edited by Amrinder Singh. Catch you next week.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HD Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.hdsmartcast.com.